another episode of the Oncology Peer Review on the Go podcast. Today is Monday, August 8th, 2022. I am your host, Audrey Sternberg. Juan Pablo Alderuccio, Assistant Professor of Medicine in the Division of Hematology, Department of Medicine at the Sylvester Comprehensive Cancer Center of the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine in Florida, spoke with Cancer Network about his review published in the journal Oncology titled Current Treatments in Marginal Zone Lymphoma. In the article, Alderuccio explored current approaches to the diagnosis and treatment of marginal zone lymphoma. He also touched on his strategies for treating localized versus advanced disease and novel emerging strategies clinicians practicing in the community should be aware of. Thank you for joining me for this episode of the Oncology Peer Review On The Go podcast. I'm here with Dr. Juan Alderuccio of the Sylvester Comprehensive Cancer Center at the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine in Miami, Florida. How are you today?
Good morning. Good.
Today, we're going to discuss your manuscript titled Current Treatments in Marginal Zone Lymphoma, which is part of the Oncology Annual Review of Treatments in Hematologic Malignancies, spearheaded by Oncology Co-Editor-in-Chief Dr. Julie Vose. This manuscript was also co-authored by Dr. Brad Eskall of the Siteman Cancer Center at Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis, Missouri. So let's just jump right into the questions. Number one, based on this manuscript, can you give us a brief review of the current standards for diagnosis of and molecular testing in marginal zone lymphoma? And here you can touch on gold standards, preferred methods, challenges, or future directions in the space.
Perfect. Hi, good morning. Yeah, marginal zone lymphoma is a rare disease, representing 7% of all non-Hodgkin lymphomas, and it's not completely standardized, the best approach in the initial workup. However, for most of the B-cell lymphomas, we use PET-CT for the staging. However, the current Lugano classification does not consider marginal zone lymphoma an FDG-AB disease. And there is, emerging data has been showing that PET-CT, most of the extranodal sites in extranodal marginal zone lymphoma are FDG-avid, and there is value of this staging method in marginal zone lymphoma. In extranodal marginal zone lymphoma, the initial workup depends on the location. In gastric, when the disease is localized in the stomach, it's very important to rule out or confirm the presence of H. pylori, as the chronic inflammation induced by these bacteria has been associated with the development of lymphoma. And also, usually it's very important because to confirm this, because patients can be treated with antibiotics, and in a significant number of the cases, this is the only treatment that the patient needs. Similarly, in patients with splenic marginal zone lymphoma, has been associated with hepatitis C. So all the patients at the initial workup should have a hepatitis C virus testing, because also patients require antiviral therapy rather than immunochemotherapy or other approaches. Regarding the further interpretation in the diagnosis, extranodal marginal zone lymphoma sometimes can become, the differential can be a little bit more complicated with other low-grade lymphomas. And there is no clear biomarkers. However, there is a new biomarker called IRTA1 that has been shown value in this entity and has been able to differentiate extranodal marginal zone lymphoma from other low-grade lymphomas. However, it's unclear what role it currently presents in the clinic, and further studies are needed to confirm the predictive value of this biomarker. Regarding splenic marginal zone lymphoma, this is a disease that usually affects the spleen and the bone marrow, and in variable incidence of peripheral blood involvement. The most common molecular alteration is the deletion in 7q that is seen in approximately 30 to 40% of the patients. followed by mutations in KLF2 and NOTCH2. These particular genomic abnormalities helps in the differential diagnosis with other low-grade lymphomas, such as lymphoplasmacytic lymphoma, that almost universally express MYD88. What is also important to remember is that splenic Merchant cell lymphoma may express MYD88 in 7 to 15% of the cases. So also the clinical impression is very important to differentiate one on the other. Regarding nodal Merchant cell lymphoma, the diagnosis is a little bit more challenging. Usually it's a disease that only affects the lymph nodes without bone marrow involvement and without extranodal site of disease. There is no specific biomarker that helps to differentiate one or the other. Usually the disease is MYD88 negatives. However, there are a few case reports showing that MYD88 can be also expressed.
Great, thank you so much for going into that. So now, could you dive into current standards for initial workup and stratification for treatment selection in marginal zone lymphoma?
Yeah, so there is a stratification in marginal zone lymphoma. There are several prognosis scores that have been developed over the last decade. In extranodal marginal zone lymphoma, there is the MALT IPI that is based on three variables, that is age of 70 or older, advanced stage disease, and elevated LDH. Also in patients previously treated with frontline immunochemotherapy with systemic agents, the presence of progression of disease within 24 months has been shown to be also a very important prognosis, influencing the prognosis of the patients in three different independent studies. Regarding splenic Merchant cell lymphoma, the HPLL prognosis score, also based on hemoglobin, platelets, elevated LDH, and extrahilar lymphadenopathy, also is the established prognosis factor in splenic Merchant cell lymphoma. However, in nodal Merchant cell lymphoma, that is the most rare of the three, there is no specific prognosis biomarker or prognosis score as it is in the other two entities.
How do you treat patients with localized versus advanced disease?
So patients that have a localized disease without evidence of systemic disease, radiation therapy remains the standard of care. In those patients with advanced stage disease, there are specific criteria that patient needs to meet in order to provide systemic agents. Usually GELF criteria is implemented similar to follicular lymphoma and Merchant cell lymphoma to decide what patients can be observed versus what patients require systemic therapy.
And now, can you do a review of current standards for therapy selection in the frontline setting? And as this is, I'm sure, a very complex topic, you can touch on one or more mainstays of treatment.
Yeah, so in most of the clinical trials in indolent lymphomas where all the indolent diseases were grouped together, that's, for example, in the BRIGHT and the STEEL trials, that are those two randomized first phase three clinical trials, they compare bendamustine or rituximab versus R-CHOP or RCVP. In mantle cell lymphoma, and other indolent non-Hodgkin lymphomas. Marginal zone lymphomas were included in those two trials. However, they were grouped as a single entity. In both trials, bendamustine and rituximab presented a similar efficacy to R-CHOP and RCVP, but they was associated with better tolerance and a better safety profile. So I think the preferred frontline therapy in extranodal Merchant cell lymphoma nowadays is bendamustine rituximab. Another possibility is single-agent rituximab that it was initially tested by Dr. Conconi in Europe several years ago and showed to be also an effective approach. However, subsequent studies show a shorter progression-free survival. And seeing compare, I still believe that probably bendamustine rituximab seems to be a more appropriate frontline therapy in this disease. However, We should consider that this patient, the bendamustine, is associated with significant T cell depletion or lymphocyte T. So patients have higher risk of opportunistic infection. Usually we incorporate PCP prophylaxis and softer prophylaxis in these patients. And recent update of the BRIDE study, investigators report a higher incidence of secondary malignancies, cutaneous, non-melanoma cutaneous malignancies, what highlights the importance of annual dermatological evaluation in patients previously exposed to bendamustine-containing regimens. Regarding splenic Marchand cell lymphoma, again, there is no standard approach. In the 90s and early 2000s, splenectomy was the most common approach. However, in the United States, splenectomy, the incidence, the frequency that physicians are performing splenectomy has been decreasing. There is usually patients with splenic Marchand cell lymphoma can be observed, except that they present symptomatic splenomegaly or cytopenias or systemic symptoms. In those cases, treatment is advised. And first, again, we need to make sure that there is no hepatitis C virus associated if this is negative. In my opinion, rituximab seems to be the most, single-agent rituximab seems to be the most appropriate approach based on European studies showing a very high complete response rate in this population. And patients can be, this regimen includes 6 weekly doses of rituximab and with the possibility to continue with 1 or 2 years of maintenance. In my opinion, completing 1 year seems to be enough and not further maintenance is needed in this specific population. Regarding nodal splenic, nodal Marchand cell lymphoma, the standard of care is more complex, again, because of the frequency of the disease, and there is no specific clinical trial addressing this, this entity. I will say that in patients with localized disease, similar as we do with patients with extranodal Marchand cell lymphoma, radiation therapy seems to be an acceptable approach. And in those with advanced disease, presenting a high tumor burden disease or other indication for treatment such as symptoms, single-agent rituximab or bendamustine rituximab also seem to be appropriate approaches.
What about in the second line setting? What are the standards there?
In the second line setting, will depend on what the patient were using in the front line setting. Patients with relapsing with systemic disease requiring therapy. If the patient didn't receive a bendamustine containing regimen, that could be an appropriate approach. Also, a lenalidomide-based regimen such as R-square or lenalidomide with rituximab is an acceptable regimen in this setting. Regarding novel agents that have been tested, ibrutinib was the first BTK inhibitor that was evaluated in this population. presented activity. However, most of the responses were partial response. The Magnolia trial that was published early this year tested zanubrutinib in patients with relapse or refractory Marchand cell lymphoma, achieving an overall response rate above 60%, a CR rate of 26%. Based on this data, I believe that zanubrutinib seems to be the BTK inhibitor of choice in patients with relapse or refractory Marchand cell lymphoma. The other big group of agents that were extensively tested in low-grade lymphomas, including Marchand cell lymphoma, were the PI3K inhibitors. However, several of these agents were removed from the FDA in early 2021 and early this year, and the only that have more experience is copanlisib that has been shown to be highly effective also in combination with rituximab. However, many patients presented grade 2 and 3 toxicities, such as hypertension and diabetes, and many patients require therapies to address those toxicities. So this is something that needs to be considered before starting PI3K inhibitors such as copanlisib plus minus rituximab in this population.
And you touched on it a little bit, but are there any novel emerging treatment strategies that clinicians who are practicing in the community should be aware of?
I think the effect of the zanubrutinib was very, very impressive. Was better compared to what was obtained. It's difficult to compare clinical trials when are not randomized, but the results of the Magnolia trial were better. The efficacy seems to be better compared to what was previously published with ibrutinib. And regarding other emerging agents, CAR T cells were tested in this setting in patients with follicular lymphoma and marginal zone lymphoma, with only 24 patients were enrolled in the SUMMA 5. And the overall response rate in this population was high, was about 90%, with a significant number of patients achieving complete responses. However, in time to event analysis, the duration of response and the progression-free survival was shorter in marginal zone lymphoma compared to follicular lymphoma. And this is also a therapy that can be associated in a subgroup of patients, in a low number of patients with significant toxicity. So I think it's a therapy for a very selected population in marginal zone lymphoma. I think also several agents that have been are currently in clinical trials, such as anti-CD19 antibody drug conjugate and anti-CD19 monoclonal antibodies in combination with other agents can eventually improve the current outcomes. And also, I think we are eager to know the results of the bispecifics in this setting that has been shown to be a very, very impressive responses in aggressive lymphomas and follicular lymphoma. So I think in the next few years, in the near future, we will have more agents in this specific setting.
Fantastic. I really appreciate that thorough review. There's a lot to unpack in all of the treatments of marginal zone lymphoma, and I encourage all of the listeners to go and read that manuscript in the journal Oncology. Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology Peer Review On The Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available, or listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcasts. The Oncology Peer Review On The Go podcast is the official podcast of Cancer Network, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at Cancer Network without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at Cancer Network.